So, here it is. Is it half empty or half full? The answer always depends on how you look at things. And the truth is, both answers are right, but they lead us to entirely different ways of seeing the world, different ways of experiencing our lives. How we view this world matters. Half empty, half full, abundance or scarcity, blessing or curse. These may not be either or questions. And maybe, just maybe, the truth of life lies somewhere in the middle, inside the both and of our proverbial glass of water. There's an old Chinese parable that illustrates how tricky it can be when we rush to label the things that happen to us in life as either a blessing or a curse. So, Chinese proverb, there's a young man, he finds a bunch of wild horses running wild out in the hillside. He rounds them up and drives them back home to his father's farm, and the neighbors say, "Look at how lucky you are. Now you have all these extra horses to help work the farm." And the father goes, "Well, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see." So the next day, the son starts to break in the horses, and one of them throws him, and the young man's leg is broken. And the neighbors say, "Look at how unlucky you are. The horse has broken your son's leg, and now he can't help you on the farm." And the father says, "Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see." So the country declares war, and the soldiers come to all the villages, and they take away all the young, able-bodied men to fight. And the neighbors say, "See how lucky you are? They didn't take your son with the broken leg, so he didn't have to go off to the war." And the father replied, "Well, maybe yes, maybe no. We shall see." You get the picture. This parable reminds us that how we look at the world, how we shape meaning around the things that happen to us, is personal. It's a matter of personal choice. Is the glass half full or half empty? Our perspectives change because our story is always changing over time. Life moves forward and circumstances shift, and we find ourselves standing on different ground. One of the gifts of experience is we gain new understanding when we can look backwards at a larger arc of our lives. The novelist Marilyn Robinson talks about someone looking back to discover that the dark years, the darkest years, turned out in hindsight to be answered prayers. So perhaps there are some dark years in your history that turned out ultimately to hold gifts for you. Gifts that were revealed slowly over time that might have led you ultimately to a better and stronger place. I know it's true in my life that sometimes doors have closed and other doors have opened, leading to something I could have never have imagined. Our responsive reading this morning invites us to look deeper beneath the surface of things and to choose to perceive and look for the unexpected gifts that might actually be lying below the surface. This is very difficult work. But in looking back, has there ever been a time in your life of loss or pain that helped you maybe see your life more clearly? Maybe an illness helped reframe priorities for you, helped you identify and appreciate what really matters most. It is sometimes difficult and sometimes nearly impossible to see the symbolic abundance of life in this proverbial glass of water. Many of us right here have lost beloved family and friends along our journey, and the glass has felt half empty ever since. How can it not feel that way? Yet despite these losses, This glass of water here reminds us that life may be half empty, but it is also at the same time half full as well. And maybe, just maybe, we can find the gifts for us inside both the abundance and the scarcity. Our job, our spiritual homework, is to bring some mindfulness, some awareness to our lives, to be intentional in our thanksgiving. You know, a friend once challenged me to notice and to start writing down at the end of each day three things that I experienced during that day that brought me joy, three things that I could be grateful for. So I did it as a spiritual practice. I kept a little notebook and a pen by my bed, and I ended the day remembering and writing down the things that made me smile. Now, it turned out to be a delicious exercise because, in truth, even in my crabbiest, I feel so sorry for myself moments, I do have so much to be grateful for. For example, I appreciate the love I have of family and friends. That was a given, so I wrote that big one down first. But the other things that I began to notice that started unfolding for me day by day really surprised me. The exercise opened up to become all about smaller, everyday, ordinary gifts. Moments that, when you added them up, meant a lot of satisfaction and joy. Now, I'm talking about that first hot, steaming cup of coffee in the morning. Oh, yeah. The way it smells when it's brewing. The way that cup warms my hands when I hold it. That first sip of the day. And the comfort I feel because I drink my coffee in quiet stillness. No TV, no radio, no electronics. I don't want the newspaper yet at this point either, because I want nothing to distract me from looking out the window and watching the sky get lighter as a new morning unfolds. And I am grateful for the gift of a fresh start for one more day. But over time, I got much better at noticing moments that took my breath away. The sound of birds, the way they greet the sun as it rises, the power of the wind as it starts to pick up and we have an oncoming storm, the gentle floating dance of a leaf as it falls from the tree, or the quiet calm of falling snowflakes, which are going to probably be happening sometime soon. How about the way the westward sky can just shout out loud with colors at the end of a day? Or the stark beauty in the moon? Or the simple act of holding a hand? Or how about children's laughter? Those precious, uninhibited giggles. That giggling of wonder and delight. Sometimes I close my eyes and I revel in the simple feel of the warm face on my skin, a warm sun on my skin, and I especially on those days after it's been too much gray, or right now, the feeling of the crisp, clean air as things get colder. Or how about the pure pleasure found in a hot shower and clean teeth, or climbing into bed with fresh sheets. Now, through this process, I also became a lot more aware of my gifts of privilege. I just returned from the UUSC College of Social Justice trip to Haiti last week, as Laura was mentioning. And people from our denomination continue to go down there and work alongside and help people whose lives have been shattered by that horrible earthquake nearly 4 years ago. It is difficult to view the lives of the Haitians I met without the filter of my familiar Western luxury and comforts. So looking through the lens of my American lifestyle, I couldn't help but see a lot of half empty, a lot of scarcity. For example, all of the rural villages where we worked, except one, had no electric power. None had running water, and certainly none had flushing toilets. So I had to step outside of myself, outside of my own cultural frame of reference, and ask myself, how do the Haitians view their life? You know, what if, for example, you grabbed a bucket several times a day and you balanced it on your head and you walked a mile or so and you went to the local community watering hole, the well, where you drew safe drinking water to be able to carry back home to your family? Now, the public well is a real community gathering spot where everyone knows your name, as the saying goes. And you run into neighbors. You stop, you visit, you catch up on all the news of the neighboring villages. And children play tag, they chase and laugh all around the well, much as I would imagine that children have done even going back to biblical times, the community wells there. So I couldn't help but wonder, if you have never known the experience of having safe drinking water delivered right into your home by turning on a tap, would you miss it? Do you miss something you've never known, or you don't know anybody else who has it either? Or instead, if modern plumbing suddenly came to your part of the world, would you miss walking to the well and visiting with your friends and neighbors several times a day? Truth is, I don't know. I don't think any of us know, because I've lived with safe drinking water coming out of my kitchen tap and with indoor plumbing all of my life. But I suspect that most Haitians probably view the truth of their lives as being both half full and half empty, that there are both blessings and curses, plenty of scarcity and abundance to go around, whether we draw our water in the kitchen or we walk to the well. Now, lest you think I'm romanticizing the simplicity of the lives that I witnessed in Haiti and that I'm choosing to emphasize the abundance and the richness of the relationships among the villagers at the expense of ignoring the modern conveniences, please know that I saw plenty of dramatic and severe, horrible scarcity that cannot be romanticized away by accentuating the positive. My heart was broken open by a relatively young man in the village whose coal black eyes were now clouded over with that milky blue of cataracts. He's completely blind at this point, and his wife shared the story with us through interpreters that he can no longer work in the fields and farm. And she does what she can, but they're struggling. They're finding it difficult to feed their family, and he can't even help out really around the house anymore. My heart aches because he is the victim of a health condition that is usually easily treatable here in the United States as just day surgery. How different this young man's life and his family's life would be if some Doctors Without Borders could get back into the rural part of Haiti where he is. And I become grateful, speechlessly grateful, for the access I have to good health care whenever I need it. And my heart also continues to ache for several of the villages who reported that because of a drought, their crops were struggling and they were having difficulty feeding themselves and their children. And by contrast, food is so abundant in most of our lives. Yes, there is poverty here in America, and too many children go to bed hungry in our own backyard. But in general, many of our nation's health problems today relate to excesses, not to scarcity. Too much food, too much high-calorie, high-fat food. One comedian quipped that the burning question that we will be asked most often in our lives is, "Do you want fries with that?" So it has been a particularly jolting cultural contrast for me to return and jump right back into America this past week from Haiti as we begin yet another holiday season. You know, this is the time of year where we're tempted to overeat, overdrink, overspend, overschedule, and overdo. And after being in Haiti, I have to say it is especially jarring to watch the television ads that push us to buy more and more and more. The ads ask us to pay more attention to what we don't have, all these goodies we'd love to see wrapped up under the tree, rather than to feel grateful for the abundance that we do have. Gratitude is an attitude. It is spiritual work. It is holy work. It not only can change the way we see the world, but it also changes the way we live our lives. When we choose to pay attention to the blessings of our lives, both large and small, we open ourselves to transformation and to greater happiness. So, are you willing to give it a try? I invite you to keep a notepad by the bed. And before you go to sleep, I invite you to write down three things that happened that day for which you are grateful. Doesn't have to be huge monumental things, but I invite you to pay attention to even the smallest of things that made you smile. It is a wonderful way of winding down your day. And I invite you to pay attention as you do this exercise for a time to see how your life might just open up in new and unexpected ways. Gratitude is an attitude. It is a way of perceiving the rich, complex truth about all of our lives, that life is a cycle of continuous change, that each of us has known abundance and joy, as well as sorrow and scarcity of deep, deep loss. It is the human experience. And our spiritual work calls us to pay attention to all of it, to drink in the beauty, the splendor, the horror, the tenderness, the triumphs, and the unbearable suffering and loss and fear. This work has allowed me to be thankful for so much, as I said before, my families and friends, for my health, for my ability to be educated when so many women around the world remain illiterate, for my smart aleck sense of humor, my love of life, my ability to travel, for the rewarding first career I had in public relations and marketing in the corporate world, as well as the gift of this second career of ministry. And I am grateful for a roof over my head when so many sleep in the streets, and yes, for my running water and my flushing toilet. But I also give thanks for those many moments of doubt, of loneliness and frustration, for failure and for emotional pain, for a painful divorce and other huge setbacks and losses. I have learned on this spiritual journey to lean in, as the Buddhists say, to lean into my pain and to become more keenly aware of my faults and my own self-centeredness, so I might just learn something from the divine gifts of emotional discomfort. What does this pain have to teach me? As we enter into this time of Thanksgiving, a time when so many of us will be gathered with family and friends to celebrate this uniquely American holiday, I invite you to take a chance to pause and to reflect and to dive deeper than diving into second helpings of turkey and dressing. May we instead choose to go forward and to live our lives each day with greater awareness, praise, and wonder for the gift of life, for the gift of this world, and for our place in the interdependent web of all things. Let us enter into this season with reverence and with thanksgiving. To quote the 13th century German mystic and theologian Meister Eckhart, he said, if the only prayer you said your whole life was thank you, it would suffice. Amen. And blessed be.